You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Ran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And today we will discuss off-play decision-making during the session. It's a strange little topic. Uri, what are we talking about?
Well, before we're going to start talking about what we're talking about, let me just tell you what we're not talking about. When we say off-play decision-making in this episode, we mean instances where the players are discussing the events that happen in play and what to do next, but as players and not necessarily as their characters. This is something that a lot of people might call metagaming. However, the phrase metagaming also includes a lot of other things which we will not be discussing, such as knowing the stats of certain monsters and knowing the rules and thinking, okay, there's 10 minutes to the end of the session, so he probably won't bring a bad evil thingy now, so we could probably do this fight anyway. There are two prevalent approaches to off-play decision-making, and why don't we start off with an example? Imagine your party has gone to an underground dwarven kingdom and is suddenly charged by a huge flaming demon, much like what happened in Lord of the Rings Mines of Moria, but not due to copyright reasons. Now, in some gaming group, it's totally okay to stop the action and then go over everyone's equipment, spells known and spells prepared, and what ability everyone have and which abilities they've already used, and decide together on the best strategy and coordinate how to execute that. Now, in other gaming group, what I just described would be very frowned upon because the party does not have the time, the party in play does not have the time to consult with each other and prepare tactics and exactly check what everyone has.
This sort of thing also happens during less dramatic scenes where perhaps we are currently chatting with a prince and one of the other players says, ask him if this and this, or suggest that we do this and this. And then the player who is currently talking, thereby in some way providing more information or more suggestion, thereby making the player who is currently doing the talk sort of like the head of the party, like the mouthpiece for the entire party, so everyone can chat and talk between themselves, while in the game they're currently doing a chatting and talking scene where no one is talking. That's, again, it's sort of a strange situation in many groups where they would simply not allow it to happen and will require everyone to say everything in-game.
Yeah, because it creates a very real gap between what happens in-play and off-play, which is a gap we usually try to minimize as much as possible. And I can hear in my mind our listeners wondering, so, Uri and Ran, are you going to tell us what is the right way to play? Well, as in most cases, there isn't a right and a wrong way. Sorry to disappoint you. Both of these approaches are merely tools who has their merits and their problems. Stopping mid-action take away from the tension and the realism of the situation, but thinking and planning may help us act more like our characters who are vastly more experienced and used to working together than we, the players, probably are. So what are we going to do in this episode? Well, what we're going to try and do is to present the advantages and disadvantages of these approaches so you can decide for yourself how to adjust your off-play discussions to maximize the experience that you want to have during your game. And let's start off with some reasons in favor of including off-play decision-making and discussions.
My first reason, which is my go-to reason for most things, is player motivations. Because some people come to play, come to game with me for some reasons, and some of them might be, I like planning stuff. So if all of my group is composed of people who enjoy planning, there's really no reason not to stop and plan. Yes, it takes it out of the realism, yes, etc., but that's what we're here to do. That's not the only thing we're here to do. We might enjoy other things as well. But all of us, most of the time, agree that we're here to plan. We want to sit down and consult the situation and see how to best solve it in a way that will make everyone happy.
Because it's a game.
Exactly, it's a game. Now, this doesn't mean that in all situations, in all cases, this doesn't mean that in all situations, the GM should allow them to sit down and discuss everything from A to Z. Because occasionally, I, as the GM, would like to do something like, there's no time for this. What do you do? And I point at a specific person and force them to act as their own person. These are scenes where I want to create confusion and doubt and anxiety. Well, that's the point, where I'm saying, now you can't plan. That's the exclusion to the default. And that's awesome and that's great and we liked it, but we do like that the default is we can plan. I have a whole article about it. I will give a link in the show notes.
Another reason to include off-play discussion is it helps to remove some of the out-of-character time that passed in the real world. Sometimes my character would do something 1 minute after the other, while in real life there has been the end and beginning of a session and a whole week passed in between.
Mm.
And having that time to simply sit down, go over my stuff, talking with other people about what we already did and what we were planning to do, maybe even in play a week ago, and having that time to discuss and getting back into that mental state allow me to better understand where my character is at. Because I, Uri, the player, has had a whole week of other things on his mind, and now as we get back to business, I need to remember what Krieger, my swashbuckler fighter, was currently in the middle of.
This also continues to my next point, which is about simulating having experience, which is something that you've discussed before, Uri. Because if we're playing a group who's supposed to be soldiers or agents, or perhaps just an adventuring party that has been working together for a long time, and they all know how to fight and how to act, and again, in dramatic scenes, they know how to hint at each other, and they know already, just by looking at someone, I know what they would like me to ask, because I know them well enough. To simulate all of this, we can talk about it around the table as the players, because part of our decision making is sort of filling up the knowledge gap between what we the players are doing and what our characters should know and should be able to do in the game.
Yeah, of course, because we have fought trolls before, so it makes perfect sense for my fighter to know that the wizard is about to hurl a bunch of flaming arrows or fireballs or firebolts or whatever he usually does at an incoming troll, because that's what we've always done.
Exactly.
And if the player doesn't remember that, then it makes perfect sense for the warlock or wizard's player to remind us that.
And if the wizard is currently talking with the guard and try to get us inside the castle, and he looks to the back and see the bard like eyeing him in a specific way, he thinks, ah, yes, 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 and then tries to add something else that he would imagine the bard would say as he explains to the guard that they really need to get inside.
However, it does allow players to collaborate more, which is my next point. Because if we give time for the players to talk among themselves, one might suggest different ideas for other characters as well. For example, saying things like, okay, I'm gonna go and distract the dragon while you find some creative way to take away all the gems, because the dragon probably won't notice that. And then other player could chime in with other suggestion. Okay, let's cast Anthole on this guy and then put everything on him and then use flight to create this helicopter effect and dropping him down the cliff where he can escape.
Mm.
Which are something that you as a player or you as a GM might never think of unless there's this mutual back and forth that allow you to brainstorm. Having said all these amazing advantages, there are also several disadvantages to including off-play discussions and decision-making. Why don't we talk about them for a moment?
So first, it can take ages. It really depends on the group.
It can really does.
It really depends on the group. But there are groups in which once you start a discussion about what to do, it will take you perhaps five times longer than it would have if we just had a single player deciding what to do. And Uri, you've already referenced this in the what are we going to do about the door situation. We talked about it a few episodes ago when we were talking about analysis paralysis, which is exactly this problem. We'll give a link in the show notes for that. But in case your group is indeed chatty, there are several ways to overcome this. Like, for example, with simple techniques of if you decide within 1 minute, you get +1 on the roll. That is a positive reinforcement. I really prefer these over negative reinforcements. Like, if it takes you more than 1 minute, your roll is with a minus one. I think that kind of sucks, and it's annoying, and it feels as if you are punishing the players for doing something that they enjoy, which is something that we should never do, I think. Or everyone, each of you guys, players, can say one thing, and then you, the acting player, decides what to do. So everyone has a chance to say something, but only one thing. So it's not entirely a discussion. So it's not entirely a discussion. And yet, there's enough planning, perhaps, to satisfy everyone without it taking more than perhaps a minute. The next point, which is probably the biggest point of complaint, is that it's pushing it out of our suspension of disbelief. Because when we talk among each other about strategy, this is necessarily an out-of-character activity, an OOC activity. It's something that we are doing as players. And that pushes us out of our character's mindset and out of the immersion and into the real world where we are sitting around the table. So that is something that in groups where being immersed is very important can be very much frowned upon because it's an act of disruption. Just by being an act of disruption, even if the planning itself is a thing that the group likes, even if they enjoy sitting down and deciding on things, maybe they want to do it in play. Maybe they would like to do it before the fight or before attending the prince or before whatever scene that it's happening because they really, really just want to avoid this specific disruption point. They just want to make sure that nothing or at least as few things as possible force them out of their character and into, again, being themselves a player around the table.
I agree. This might be especially prominent in cases where a single character has a lot of the spotlight or a lot of the burden placed on them. This could be a discussion, like we mentioned before, one character is talking with the king and no one else is there, or one character is infiltrating some hidden base, and those characters are alone at that moment. But the off-play discussion allow for constant consultation and discussion and take away that moment of burden and responsibility, which kind of ruins the moment.
This also leads me to my third and final point. Talking amongst ourselves as players and arriving at a plan might be a bit too helpful. It might be a bit too powerful a technique when we compare it to the GM, who is only one person. And a single person can't possibly, unless they're a genius, cope with the strategic capability of a whole table. So, if we have the capability of sitting down and discussing amongst ourselves and arriving at the most optimal course of action, we are pushing so hard against the GM that we might be overpowered in some way. It could be that we completely destroy all the enemies with a clever plan. It could be that we completely outmaneuver the prince with a clever plan. And that's because the GM just didn't have time or ability or whatever to sit down and decide on something that is better than what we just arrived at. So, while planning is awesome and fun, maybe it's good for the narrative not to overplan. Even if it takes you a very short time, even if you're doing it in character, even if whatever, whatever. Maybe just allow the GM some room. Of course, the GM have a lot of power. They have more power than you have around the table, obviously. And planning is, in a way, an attempt to push against. But this push can't be taken too far.
And regardless, I love the fog of war. I love it when you make wrong decisions that lead to hilarious results. I love it when the wizard decide to, I don't know where I'm taking this example from, when the wizard decide to cast Shatter on the bridge they're currently on to make the flaming demon fall down the endless pit and thus saving the party. But since he couldn't cooperate with anyone, no one could perform aid another action to help the wizard from falling down the bridge, and thus it was his own undoing.
So let's talk a bit about finding a balance. Because I believe that in most tables, you will probably find at least one player who really enjoys planning and at least one player who thinks that it's kind of disruptive and would like to think as their character. Perhaps all of the others are somewhere in between. these two players will push at different directions, and that might cause some friction and some anger in the party, because they necessarily fight against each other. Someone who wants to only think as their own character will have to come into conflict with someone who wants us to now talk about what we are going to do as players. So my suggestion is that the GM should be aware of the situation, should talk about it with the players, and should come to an agreement where, generally speaking, the more tactically interesting scenes and combats should also provide the PCs with an ability to plan and or communicate in-game. That is, if we are currently fighting a dragon or whatever, allow the player characters to shout at each other, to maybe use some mind link, to maybe be able to use pre-established signs to each other, even if we haven't actually pre-established the signs and we are only just now saying, yeah, I wave my hand in a specific way and then you know to throw a fireball. And on the other hand, the more dramatically interesting scenes and combats should be perhaps a bit more straightforward from a tactical perspective. That is, if we are currently fighting a group of orcs, and it's an important group of orcs, and this is something that we would like, or at least some of us, would really like to play as our characters more than as a group of, that is currently planning, then maybe the fight shouldn't be too harsh on us. Maybe not choosing the optimal tactical decision shouldn't have extreme repercussions. We should be allowed to put more focus on the portraying the character part than on the planning the correct course of action part of the game. So, as a GM, we should be able to satisfy both players and everyone else if we just pay attention to this and make sure we provide enough of each kind of scene. Also, we can introduce some things into the game that will help us in many ways, like spells or cybertech that allow quick communication. If we have all of us radios in our heads that allow us to talk very quickly with each other, then we have an in-game explanation of how we can plan together. Or we can make most of the enemies, generally speaking, kind of regular. That is, the cost of, again, non-optimal solutions against them isn't high. Many enemies will still be powerful and have all sorts of unique and awesome abilities, but not all of them. So we allow at least part of the party to engage with enemies in a way, well, on their own terms. I can be myself, I can play my character as I fight this orc, because not flanking it and also using a specific spell, etc., will not result in me dying. It will allow me, I have the room to do whatever I want with it, narrative-wise, in the story, and explain, and do, and act, etc. We should still have an ultra-powerful, amazing orc somewhere around here for the some other players, those that do enjoy the planning and would like to plan with maybe a single other player, maybe with everyone, maybe with their familiar, if they're really cool, to as they approach and engage with that enemy.
I think there are also ways of combining these two approaches. For example, if you have a player which is the strategist, you can, for example, give those players a means of communication with the other party, but limit it. For example, you can whisper from a distance only 5 words each round, so make them count, or things like that. I've added numerous mechanical implements to help with these kinds of issues in the past. For example, during a negotiation between one of the player characters and a nobleman, I've decided that whenever that player uses a fate point, he can take the scene back to when the party was discussing the upcoming negotiation, and they ask themselves, but what would we do if the nobleman would ask us to do this? And then they have a short discussion, which is very time limited, and then they go back to the present and continue the discussion. So mechanical tool can really help. I remember in old versions of D&D, you had the innuendo skill, where you would roll if you could perform an innuendo to let someone know something without anyone else noticing, which was another way of doing this.
In Blades in the Dark, it doesn't matter if the role you're currently rolling for is happening currently in the timeline or happened before and it's actually a flashback. So you definitely can plan with the other players about a thing that we've decided that have already happened, and then roll to see if it worked or failed. So that worked very well with your suggestion here.
So why don't we summarize? We can summarize this episode simply with one of old maxims that was written in Delphi in ancient Greece in the temple of Apollo, which was simply, know thyself. Everyone in the gaming group usually know what the group enjoys. And the GM knows what kind of mood and atmosphere she's trying to set up in this specific scene or encounter or game. And off-play discussions and decisions-making are tools to help create that magical balancing point between that atmosphere that the GM wants to create in the session and those things which the party really enjoys. And I think both us as players and GMs should aspire to constantly try and aim to the point where the other side is trying to put the session in.
If you enjoyed this episode, good on you and good on
us.
Hooray! Hooray, Uri, hooray. We allowed them to enjoy another episode. Go to dwarfcast.net and maybe you'll find some other episodes you enjoy as well. Maybe tell a friend about this, especially if the friend is very fond of planning or is very much against planning. And this episode, perhaps, will allow them to see a different picture or come to some sort of a solution with the rest of the party and the GM. Also, send us an email to show@dwarfcast.net and tell us about some other problems and or solutions you've come up with during your games. And now, it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our personal lives, and I would like to begin. I am currently in the final stages of the first adventure of Hell's Rebels, which is a great, great fun. I'm jamming it using Pathfinder 2nd Edition in a local gaming club, RP Haven, and we are beginning the final dungeon of the first adventure. It's a city campaign, so calling them dungeons is tricky because almost everything happens in the city, and the city doesn't really have dungeons, of course.
Have you ever been in an IRS facility anywhere?
Exactly. So there's a keep in town, there are some temples. They will not be assaulting any of these. They are going against a pretty unusual dungeon that I will not, of course, reveal here in case any of them are listening. Although, by the time this episode is up, they have already gone through most of it. I won't reveal it in any case, in case anyone else plans on playing Hell's Rebels. But it's going to be great fun, and I continue to enjoy Pathfinder 2. I find it a bit too granular most of the time, but we're finding a balance in the party, which is good and fun for us. We are, by the way, a party that very much enjoys to plan.
I have two things to talk about. Number one, I'm currently running a campaign, a mini campaign for a group of friends who have never actually played role-playing games before. Yeah, we did an introduction session where we created character and we played along, and it was an amazing session. They're all amazing guys. The campaign is called A Million Dragons, because why not go over the top? And tomorrow we have another gaming session, and I'm super excited to see what those guys going to do next, because one of the things I love most about running games to new players is that in many, many cases, they don't know what the conventions are. So
they do weird stuff.
And since they are not familiar with the tropes of the genre, they tend to really mess things up, which is hilarious. And I'm spending most of my other free time on the current adventure, which I'm writing, called Escaping Thalamus's Lab, which got some amazing feedback from a few playtesters, and just finished the editing process. And oh my God, writing an adventure is so hard when you're trying to do it professionally.
Yes, a good adventure. I think a good adventure is so hard. Yeah.
It was very important for me to do the whole process start to end, meaning I'm going over the editing. I've designed the map professionally myself using a software which I had to learn by myself. I'm doing the layout. I'm buying the art. I'm trying to do all the phases so I will actually understand through working what every single step is comprised of, to understand each step fully. And it's not an easy journey, and there's a lot of things to learn, but the amazing thing is I really feel that my character sheet as a person really got some new skills added to it. So, see you next week, guys! Later!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
I am a great magician! Are there ladies present at this ball? I just try to imagine whatever a bard would hint a wizard to add to whatever they're saying, and it's always, are there any ladies present at this ball?